Hello, everyone, and welcome. Paula Vale here, your host of Why Am I So Happy? And also the host of Choices, Finding Your Joy on WBTVN television. I'm so happy to welcome everyone today. Happy to have you with us. I have just a fascinating lady with me today. I'm so happy to share her. I have Stephanie Clark. Reverend Steph is a recovering non-denominational reverend who likes to walk a little on the wild side of God. The title of her latest book, recently released, is The Misadventures of an Irreverent Reverend, a spirited guide for rebels and renegades. How fun! She was born in London, England, came to South Africa for the first time in 1985 on holiday, and fell in love with it. So Stephanie is joining us today from South Africa. I'm so happy to have you with us today, Stephanie. Welcome!
I'm happy to be here, Paula. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Oh, you're just so welcome. And I understand you'd like to begin the show with an opening prayer. I love that idea.
Okay, I would. I'd love to do that. So I suggest that everyone who's listening in just takes a moment to sit up straight in their chair, feet flat on the floor, and take a deep breath. And so we're just taking this moment now to turn aside from the outer world. We're turning aside from everything that's been happening in our day so far. All of the stimuli to our senses, we're turning aside from thoughts that we've been having, feelings we've been experiencing, any past memories, any future anticipation. We're bringing our attention fully and completely into the moment, knowing that there is only one power, one presence, one life, which some people choose to call God. That power, that presence, that life force is the power of peace, the power of love, the power of wholeness, the power of truth, the power of abundance, power of beauty. It is the only power there is, omnipotence, omniscience, and omnipresence. I am that, and so is Paula. Paula and I are most wonderfully connected in this spiritual presence, and Paula and I are connected with everybody who is listening in to this radio show. We are all one in consciousness, one in the mind of the divine. And I speak my word now for this particular radio show, for this interview, and know that Spirit has gone ahead to prepare the way. It knows exactly what has to be said. It knows exactly what has to be asked. It knows what has to unfold here for the highest good of everyone concerned, for Paula and all her listeners and everyone who is in any way connected to any of us in consciousness. I know this radio show unfolds in an atmosphere of love and joy, that Paula and I are divinely connected and perfectly attuned to one another. So it's as if God is speaking to God and God is listening to God. There's only one thing happening here. More life, more love, more power, more truth, more consciousness is being revealed in the universe for the highest good and the highest upliftment of all concerned. So I bless this radio show. I name it Good, Good, and Very Good. I know it's done. So I just give thanks for the perfect outcome, and I release this word into law and allow it to be. And so it is. Amen.
And so it is. Amen. Thank you, Stephanie. That was beautiful.
Thank you.
I love it. Thank you so much. Oh, I would love for you to share with your listeners a quick summary of your life journey up until now. What brought you to where you are, being the reverend that you are?
Okay, so it's quite an unusual journey. I didn't have any religious upbringing at all in my childhood. My father, actually, I found out much later in life, was a medium. He was a spiritualist. But we didn't go to church except for a wedding or a christening. But I was always unhappy. I knew something was missing, and I couldn't figure out what it was. But I knew I had to find it in my lifetime. In 1977, I went to university in Bradford in Yorkshire, and I studied German and Russian. And when I that course that I took allowed me to live in communist Russia for a few months, which was one of the best experiences of my whole life, to live behind the Iron Curtain. And when I was in Russia, I met a spiritualist, and she was very good at reading cards, and she read my cards for me. And that was the trigger for me to really understand that there's something going on in the invisible realm that I didn't know about, but people can tap into it, and they can use that invisible realm and the information they get from it to help people on their journey. So it was quite an opening for me to have that awareness. It wasn't like a gypsy in the fairground, cross my palm with silver. It was a genuine channeling of grace to help another human being. When university finished, I moved to Amsterdam and I tried to become a hippie. And then I didn't succeed at being a hippie. My mother immigrated to South Africa. She left my dad and immigrated to South Africa because her sister was already living here. And so she came to see her sister and fell in love with South Africa. And I came to see her in 1985. And I had been spiritually searching for a few years. And when I got to South Africa, I had only really booked for a two-month holiday, but then I found the Church of Religious Science and the Science of Mind Teaching in that two-month period of time. And I knew I had found what I've been looking for. So I ripped up my round-trip ticket back to Europe, and I decided to stay in South Africa and study with the minister there in the Religious Science Church. And that was the beginning of me becoming a minister. I had the calling to study as a minister from very early on when I started my Science of Mind studies, but I kept ignoring it. I was much more interested in having fun, going out, getting drunk, having lots of different boyfriends, and, you know, like typical ministerial training. but then in, when was it? It was 1988. Yep. I asked a friend in my church to pray for me to know my purpose. And when she prayed, I got the clear message, go to California and do the ministerial training. So we couldn't do a ministerial training in South Africa in those days. It was South Africa was too small. I had to come to America. And I found the Agape Church of Religious Science. It's really called the Agape International Center of Truth, where Reverend Michael Beckwith preaches and teaches. So right away, I was just involved with his ministry, and what a blessing that was. You see, in South Africa, I was there during the apartheid years, and the teaching that we teach, the Science of Mind teaching, is a teaching of oneness. But what I noticed was that only white people came to church. Black people didn't. Black people had their own churches, but the two races were not united during that time period at all. And so my vision was to have a church or a spiritual community where both blacks and whites would be able to worship together, to worship the same God in an environment of oneness and unity and harmony. And I didn't know that already behind the scenes moves were being made to release Mandela from prison. I didn't know that we'd have a black president in South Africa. I didn't know that we would have a democratic system here. In those days, with apartheid, it didn't look like it was going to end anytime soon. So that was my vision, and that's why I went to America to study to be a minister so I could have a multiracial church. I've spoken a lot. Maybe you just want to ask me a question now.
No, I love it. I love it. Yes. And okay. I mean, that's what a difference to go from England to South Africa. That's just, uh-huh. That's really fascinating. And
I never thought I'd go to South Africa. I was an armchair socialist, and I really was disgusted by the apartheid politics in South Africa, and I had no intention of going there. But then my mother emigrated, so I thought, if I don't go there, then I won't be able to see her. And she wanted to come and see me in Amsterdam, but I was living in a squat with a gangster at the time, and I didn't really want my mum to have to experience that about me. So I thought, I'll go to South Africa. Anyway, so that was the beginning of my destiny, that my mum had emigrated to South Africa, and I went to visit her, never thinking in a million years that I would end up staying there and starting a church. That was really never on my mind. I never grew up as a child thinking, one day I'm going to be a minister.
Yes.
It didn't even occur to me.
I love it. I love it. And so many times in life, we have a vision of where we're going, but, you know, we get led to a whole different direction. It's mm-hmm. really fascinating
yeah.
and can be really beautiful. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking that many of our listeners may have heard of Reverend Michael Beckwith. And he was one of the thought leaders who was featured in the movie The Secret about the law
right.
of attraction. And he was interviewed by Oprah and Larry King. Now, you actually were able to meet him, weren't you? What was that like?
Mm-hmm.
How did that impact you?
Well, Reverend Michael is an amazing being. So I started my ministerial training at a school called Santa Anita in near Pasadena in California. And when I spoke to my ministerial colleagues about wanting to start an interracial church in South Africa, they said I had to meet Reverend Michael Beckwith because he had a fabulous church at Agape where all the races were worshiping together. So the first time I went into Agape, I couldn't believe it. It was huge. It was probably more than 1,000 people the first time I went in a large hotel in Santa Monica. And the atmosphere in the room was electric. And I saw white people holding hands with black people and colored people holding hands with Hispanic people.
Oh,
and it was such a beautiful melting pot. I was so inspired. And I thought, wow, this is actually happening in America. So it must be possible in South Africa. Agape was really the precedent for me. It was the thing that it really made me know that my vision could come true, that it wasn't just a pie-in-the-sky, airy-fairy idea, that Reverend Michael was already manifesting it. And then what would happen is he would speak, and I just felt rocked in my soul. I don't know how to describe that feeling of, it was like my whole energy was being rewired, just listening to him and being in his presence. And then after church was over on Sunday morning, I would go back to my flat in Pacific Palisades and I would just cry my eyes out the whole afternoon. I just cried and cried and cried. He had the power to release something within me that was blocked. And so that was the first few times that I went to listen to him. And then when I graduated through the Santa Anita Ministerial School, I asked him if he would be the keynote speaker. And he agreed. In those days, you could book him. You could book him maybe within 3 months, you know, and he would show up. Now you have to book him 2 years in advance or more. So he spoke at my graduation ceremony, and that's where I talked about my vision. And from that point on, we've been very connected around the whole South Africa ministerial theme. And in fact, he's coming out to South Africa in August, and he's going to speak at a New Thought conference called Birthing Our Feminine Divine, and I'm going to be speaking there too on God and sex, which is one of my favorite themes.
Oh,
so I'm very excited.
I love it.
Excited to see him again after many years.
Yes, yes. So tell us a bit of your view on the law of attraction and how that plays into God and Source. Any thoughts on that you'd like to share?
Okay. Well, I think it's good to start by saying that God is not a man up in the sky. And I know it sounds, I'm sure most of your listeners are very aware of that. And I've been aware of that for a long time. But that's the image of God that we've been raised with mostly.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely a patriarchal power monger. And so when I think about the law of attraction, I don't try not to think about that God image. I'm thinking about energy. And what I understand from my science of mind teaching is that whatever I focus my energy and attention on must manifest itself in the physical, in the earth plane. So the law of attraction, the way I understand it, is just energy moving in relationship to the dominant nature of my thought.
Mm-hmm.
So what I deeply believe, not what I'd like to believe, but what I deeply believe, that is what is going to show up in my world.
Yes. Yes, and that's just, it's very powerful, isn't it?
Mm.
I personally really believe our thoughts really set our direction.
Yeah. I have a good example of it. It just happened before the show started.
Oh, love it.
I've got so I'm in South Africa and I drive with an international driving license here and it's just about to expire. And I've arranged for my new driving license, my international license, to be processed for me in the UK. And it's being sent to my friend in a town called St. Albans. And last year, in February, I was staying with this particular friend, and I met a girl from South Africa. And I've been praying about getting that international license somehow from the UK to Johannesburg without putting it in the mail, because the South African mail is very corrupt and very inefficient. So if the South African has a sensitive piece of mail that they want to be sure they're going to get in their hands safely, then no one sends it in the post, in the regular post. Oh. Anyway, so I just visualized that the hand of God was picking up my letter from England and bringing it over to South Africa. And I visualized that I was holding that letter in my hand with the license inside it. And then tonight I was just inspired to call the woman from South Africa who I met last year in St. Albans. And she was totally surprised to hear from me. We haven't spoken in a year since we met. And I said, is it at all possible in your South African network in England that you know somebody who's coming to Johannesburg next week who could bring my driving license for me? And she said, yes, one of my employees is coming on Tuesday.
Oh, my gosh.
And I said, great, can you just ask her to bring it for me? And she said, sure. And I thought when she said one of her employees that she was going to maybe speak to this lady tomorrow. But then she said, Sam, can you take a letter from my friend to Johannesburg next Tuesday when you fly to South Africa? And Sam said, sure.
I love it. Oh, my gosh. What timing. Oh.
So she'll arrive on Wednesday in Joburg because it's usually an overnight flight. And that's the day my license runs out. So.
Oh, that, oh, my gosh. That is so perfect. I just think it's fascinating how things, the timing of things, how we meet who we're meant to meet. I just think it's so fascinating and so beautiful.
I really love it. It turns me on all the time. Just synchronicity and serendipity.
Yes.
I love all that stuff. Miracles every day. I do too.
And we're going to talk about miracles a little bit later in the show because I know your book is full of miracles. So I'd like to ask you, what prompted you to want to write a book?
I think I've always wanted to do it, but I grew up in middle-class England, and as I was growing up, no one was encouraged to be a writer or an artist or someone so-called on the fringes of society. I was encouraged to get a good, steady job, you know, to earn a living, and not necessarily something I loved or something that was, for me, a form of creative self-expression. It was something that would be secure. And that was the conditioning that I was exposed to as a child and as a student in school. So, I failed my English language exam as well. I wasn't very good at writing. I wasn't very good at composition. I failed English language composition at school. So it didn't really occur to me that I could actually write a book. But then, I've always loved writing. I journaled for a long time. And my journaling was very important to me as a therapeutic process and a way to just write about everything that happened in my world. And then, so writing the book was always a dream. And then I discovered Julia Cameron. She wrote the book called The Artist's Way. And I met her at Agape, actually. She did a workshop at Agape. And she wrote the book The Artist's Way for blocked creatives. So as soon as I started working the process and realizing, actually, I can do this, and it's right and good that I express my creative energy in the way that I love and the way that makes me happy, because that will make the rest of the world happy too.
Mm-hmm.
It's perfect to do that. And it's not so much about earning a living from it. It's expression for the sake of expression.
Yes.
So Julia Cameron really inspired me. And then I came across a woman called Donna Kozik who ran a course called Write Your Book in a Weekend.
Oh my gosh.
And that sounds laughable. How can you write your book in a weekend? It sounds really crazy. But so I signed up for the course, and I had a few months before the course started. From the time I signed up, I had a very hectic travel schedule when I lived in Europe, so I was rarely in the UK. And I psyched myself up for it, and I didn't have to do any research because I knew I was going to write my autobiography. And so the weekend started, and she ran it very professionally. And by the end of the weekend, I didn't have my book, but I had about a third of the first draft. And I was really happy with that, because a third of the first draft meant that two more thirds and I'd have a book. You know, it was an internal shift that I had to make from I'd love to write a book to I can write a book and I'm writing a book. So then I self-published. That was in 2012, I think. I started writing in 2010 and I self-published in 2012. And recently, what you referred to at the beginning of this interview was the third edition of my autobiography. So The Misadventures of an Irreverent Reverend, A Spirited Guide for Rebels and Renegades. That's the third edition. And I've written a lot more stories and a lot more miracles, and I've made it about twice the size of the original version.
Oh, I love it. I love it. So there was the first version, and then now there's the second version.
Yeah. Oh,
my gosh.
In the first version, there were some things that I didn't want to write about, and it was too painful to me. So it just took a couple more years for me to process those things and then be able to write about them in my book and make it public. So.
Yes. And your book is, you know, so unique. It's not just the autobiography. It contains life lessons for the reader. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, the idea for the book came to me quite a long time ago, before I even started writing. I was very surprised when I got to ministerial school in California, and I found that I was quite familiar with Bible passages and Bible verses. And because I didn't have a religious upbringing, I was quite surprised about that. I don't know if it's past life stuff or if I just absorbed stuff from school. But anyway, I loved learning metaphysical Bible interpretation. For me, that made the Bible come alive, and it made it something that was real and that I could apply to my own life. And so my idea was to have a Bible verse at the beginning of each chapter and then a metaphysical interpretation of that Bible verse, and then my own story or a story from my life to illustrate that Bible verse in a way that a human being could relate to it. So bringing it from the spiritual abstract into the concrete physical, into a human experience. So that's what I did. So as well as telling my story, there are also I'm sharing with the reader how I learned lessons along the way in my journey. And hopefully for the reader too, there are lessons that can be applied to their own lives.
Yes. I love that. So
should I just put a quick story from the book?
Oh, I would love it.
Give an example of,
yeah, we love okay. stories.
So one of the chapters is on prosperity. And the Bible verse, got the book here. I'll just have to paraphrase it. To him that hath, more shall be given, but to him who hath not, even the little he has shall be taken away. Now, what that Bible verse means is if you have a sense of havingness in your life, then the thing that you think you have, you'll get more of. So if you have a sense of I have money, or I have love, or I have free time, or I have plenty of friends, or I have a lovely home, if you think and you know deep down in your soul that you have that stuff, you get more of it, and it's mm-hmm. effortless for you. But if you think I have not, I don't have enough money, I don't have enough love, I don't have enough time, even the little you have will be taken away. Mm-hmm. So you'll experience even less money, love, and time than you think you have, because it's the law of attraction. So what I'm focusing on will expand. And if I'm focusing on a lack, even that lack will expand in my yes. experience. So you often hear people who don't have enough money, and they're so worried about not having enough money that anxiety and that fear and that focus on not enoughness actually creates more loss and even less money than they have currently. So I use the example of money in my book because I think it's very relevant to most people on the planet. We all have a relationship with money where there's a lot of baggage that we carry from the past. Money is the root of all evil. All of those biblical phrases that mm-hmm. have led us to think that money is something bad or wrong. Anyway, so I was living in, Mar Vista in California. And I was very worried about money. I had a job. and I had a flat, but I always really struggled at the end of the month to pay the rent. And I was really worried about not enough, like not having enough to make it. And I wanted to go on a retreat with my church, with the Agape Church. There was going to be a practitioner retreat, and I just definitely couldn't afford it. But I was just worried about paying the rent every month. That was my biggest fear. And I had just moved to this flat, and I had a checkbook with the address of my old flat. And I ripped up that checkbook, but I didn't rip it up into tiny pieces. I just ripped it in half, and I put the checkbook in a big dumpster. So in those days, I didn't realize this, but someone like a homeless person or somebody picked that checkbook up out of the dumpster and went into the bank and signed a check for $25 and was given $25 over the counter. But if it was the same person or different people, I don't know, but that happened three times. So then I get my bank statement and suddenly $75 has gone out of my account without me even knowing that someone had been using my old checkbook. And in those days, you didn't have to show ID. You could just sign a check and no one questioned it. And my signature is very easy to forge. So anyway, so then I realized, oh, that's because I was thinking lack thoughts around money, that behind my back, the universe was taking money away from me. So as soon as I realized it, I realized I have to change my thinking. Otherwise, money will be taken from me in other ways too. I mean, obviously that I was not going to have any more money taken out of that dumpster, but out of that from that checkbook. But nevertheless, there could have been other ways that the universe would take from me. And it could be like a tax bill or a parking fine, or there's lots of ways that the universe demands demands what it's owed because of my thinking. So the next day, it was my birthday, and someone from my church at Agape brought me a birthday card with a $1 bill in it, and he blessed that $1 bill. He blessed it for me, and he said, he told me he'd blessed it for me. And he gave it to me, and I put my hands on that dollar bill, and I blessed it. I just blessed it and blessed it and blessed it. I knew that if I could bless this money and be grateful for what I had, even though it was seemingly only $1, it was a symbol of what I had. And so I blessed that dollar bill, and then the mail arrived, and my best friend on the East Coast, Harriet, had sent me a tithe check for – it was over $200. Within hours of blessing this $1 bill, I had a tithe check for over $200. And it was the exactly the money I needed to pay the rent and pay for the practitioner retreat. And the day that it arrived was the deadline for the practitioner retreat, so I had to sign up that day.
Oh, my gosh. It's beautiful, isn't it? It's beautiful. And that's such a powerful statement, you know. That the gratitude and the blessing of that $1 and that will bring it other than the fear. Oh, I just think that's such a powerful message. We do have to pop out for a break. Stephanie, you are just so adorable. I just am so enjoying this. Everyone, Stephanie and I will be right back. Thank you. Thank you, Stephanie.
Okay.
Everyone, this is Paula Vale, founder of Wellness Inspired and host of the Why Am I So Happy show on BBS Radio. My passion is sharing the beautiful healing modality of Reiki with the world. I help you reach a new level of self-awareness and create a more confident and empowered version of yourself. Learn how Reiki will change your life. Go to wellnessinspired.com. When you live a life with love and compassion, you allow your blessings to manifest. Check out my Reiki training and Reiki practitioner mentoring program, and look for my soon-to-be-released ebook, Why Am I So Happy? At wellnessinspired.com and the paulavnetwork.com. Big hugs to everyone. Paula V. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Why Am I So Happy? Oh my gosh, I am so happy today having Stephanie Clark as our guest. I'm just enjoying this so much, Stephanie. So fun.
Thank you for that.
Yes.
Me too.
And I love that your book is so full of miracles. I have to share something. I'm just a big believer in miracles, and I think they happen every day. And personally, I believe I was a miracle. I was 2 pounds, preemie baby, and not supposed to survive the night, and given, you know, and there I was. I survived. So I've always believed God, Source, wanted me to believe, to live. And so my whole life I have felt I'm grateful for that. So, I mean, miracles happen all the time. And how would you define a miracle, Stephanie?
I've got quite a lengthy definition of it. Unfortunately, it's not a simple definition. But, for example, in a traditional meaning of miracle in a dictionary, you'd read something like a wondrous work of God, an extraordinary and welcome event that is not explicable by natural or scientific laws and is therefore attributed to a divine agency. And I don't like those definitions because it suggests to me that there's a supernatural power outside of us that's working and that's pulling the strings, and we don't have a part in that. But I believe that I'm one with all of life. I'm one with divine consciousness. And whenever I or we have a shift in our thinking in the direction of heaven, there's a matching reflection on the earth plane. So it's always a miracle, as far as I'm concerned, is always based on an internal shift. So away from a sense of separation of I can't, it won't happen, it's not possible, to everything's possible in the divine mind, and I am the agent for that. So it's an internal shift, but every time we shift internally, then there has to be an external manifestation of that. I have another example of that too. So when I was working in California, I worked as a spiritual counselor full-time, and again, I was dealing with my money issues. I was really struggling with that stuff. And a woman booked a session with me, and I think at the time I charged about $60 for a session. This was in the 90s. So I thought, great, I'm going to have $60 in my pocket after this session, and I will be able to pay the rent. Relief, right? So then she called back and said, I'm so sorry, I messed up. I have an appointment, and I can't come tomorrow. And I'll call you when I'm free, and I'll book again when I'm free. And I'm thinking, yes. No, the rent's got to be paid, and I was counting on that. But then I had to go through an internal shift about that, because then I realized, you know, this woman is coming to me for spiritual counseling, and my obligation or my duty is to be of service to her. And not only to be of service to her, but to see her as a divine being, an unlimited divine being. And if I see her as my rent, I am blaspheming. I'm blaspheming against her because she's a divine being. She's not on earth to fix my financial needs. And I said, God, and I just apologized to this being. I apologized to her in my mind. And I said, I'm so sorry that I misperceived you. I'm so sorry that I saw you as my rent payment. And if and when you book again with me, absolutely, I'm here to serve you and to see your divinity, and that's my only purpose with you. The phone rang again. She said, you know what? I managed to change my appointment around. Can I still have that booking that I just made with you?
Wow. Oh.
That's how fast it works. It works. So there's a shift in thinking, and then there's a shift in the physical plane as well.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, that's a perfect way to explain it. A shift in the thinking and then a shift in what manifests. I love that.
That's right.
I love that.
Yeah. And also what's interesting to me is that in the definition I read to you, it's not explicable by natural or scientific laws. So science is continually evolving. And imagine the Israelites wandering through the desert, you know, a few thousand years ago, and imagine them now if they saw water coming out of a tap. You know, like, that would be a miracle, right? Mm-hmm. But only because the scientific laws weren't understood enough at that point to bring water through a tap or through mm-hmm. a pipe into a tap. Mm-hmm. But then you see, it's not a miracle once the scientific laws have been discovered. It's like, this is normal, this is natural. So yeah. Miracles are really natural. But because our thinking might be stuck in the past or stuck in limitation, we don't see it as natural. We see it as something amazing or awesome. And it is. It still is. I have a lovely quote that I've started using at the beginning of all of my new blog. It's a miracle blog, and it's Earth's miracles are heaven's laws.
Oh, my gosh. That is beautiful. Earth's miracles are heaven's laws.
Is the way that it is in heaven naturally, that everything works in a beautiful, smooth, harmonious way that human beings could never orchestrate or manage.
Yes.
You know, that's what I love about it. What's so completely exciting about miracles, that I humanly had nothing to do with it.
Yes.
Nothing to do with it at all.
And that is very exciting, because we can know that miracles are happening around us. Miracles can happen around us, you know? They're out there.
I loved what you said, too, about believing that you are a miracle. Because I can mm-hmm. hear from that you have an awareness of the miraculous as who you are. I mean, you yes. are a miracle. So you already have that sense of havingness about miracles. So I'm yes. sure for you, miracles do abound in your experience.
Yes.
So it's the same. It's the example that I gave earlier. To him that hath, more shall be given. To him that hath not, even the little he has shall be taken away. So for your listeners now, to develop a consciousness of miracles and being aware of the so-called little miracles that occur in daily life, like that I opened my eyes this morning, you know, that I'm
yes,
that I saw sunshine, and that the sunshine is strong and warm and bringing life. And so just focusing on the natural miracles that are all around us, so that, yes. that and developing that consciousness of miracles allows for more to happen. As soon as I start to perceive it and really be aware of miracles in my world, they must expand in my experience. They must.
Oh, I love that. I'm going to say that every morning, Stephanie. Today, may I be aware of the consciousness of miracles. That's beautiful. Oh, I love it. That is so beautiful. Tell us what you offer your clients. What work and sessions, what is it you do? And do you do this worldwide? Can anyone contact you? Tell us a bit about that, would you please?
Yeah. So I've been doing spiritual counseling for many years, and I recently studied to be a law of attraction coach as well. So the two are very close, really. And I work with clients. I work on Skype. And I love working on Skype because I can work with anybody anywhere in the world, and I can record the session and send my clients the session afterwards. So, yeah, I'm just loving what I do with people and the miracles that abound in our work together. I just want to share one quickly. There was a lady came to me recently, and she was struggling in her work. She was working in a very abusive situation with an employer. I think the employer sounds like quite a psychopath, but nevertheless, this was what she had attracted in her working world, and she was supporting her whole family. So her mother and father and her daughter were living in the same house, are living in the same house, and she is the one responsible for supporting them all. So we worked on some affirmations together to counteract her negative thinking about herself and her value. One of the affirmations I gave her was, I bring infinite value to the world. And I had her say that over and over and over again until she began to believe it. And the beautiful thing about truth is that eventually you will believe it, because the truth is more powerful than the lie. So the lie is, oh, I'm not worth anything, I'm no mm-hmm. good, I don't deserve. Those are the lies that typically we tell ourselves. And as soon as you start to speak the truth about who you are, the whole universe shifts on its axis. And as soon as you can believe it, the universe just turns around and you'll start to manifest different things. So we did that affirmation, I bring infinite value to the world, and she began to believe it. And then she said, I want to work in a different job. I definitely need to be in a different environment. And I said, okay, so let's try this. So I now have my dream job and my salary is off the charts. And she loved that. So I just intuitively picked that up, that that would work for her, and it totally worked for her. And she started working with that affirmation. And then I saw her last weekend, and she had told me that she'd been offered a really amazing job by a previous manager of hers. So she was doing her affirmations every day in the car on the way to work, and then she got the hunch that she needed to call this previous manager and make contact with her. And she opened up her email, and this lady had already tried to contact her and said, I've got this amazing position for you in Cape Town, and when can you start? And and it is her dream job. She was telling me about it, and it's just perfect for her. And so the partners in this company where she's going to start working, they will pay her a basic salary, but then they want her to earn her money on commission. She's in recruitment. They want her to earn on commission only eventually, but they'll pay her a basic salary to begin with. And they said to her, we want you to earn I can't say this on radio, but a big lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And we want your salary to be off the charts. They actually used the words around her salary that we had used in the affirmation a couple of weeks before.
Oh my gosh.
Isn't that gorgeous? Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
Oh, so lovely. Yes. So lovely. And she wants to live in Cape Town. Right now she's living in Joburg, but she wants to live in Cape Town. So the company are going to help her move down to Cape Town, and she's going to be able to work in Joburg from home while she's going through the moving procedures, so she doesn't have to wait till she can move there to start working. It just, everything is falling into place so beautifully. So yes. Lovely.
I love it.
And then I had another client. She wasn't really a client as such. She's my stepfather's nurse. My stepfather has Alzheimer's, and she's his nurse. And she had to go off work because she had cancer of the cervix. And she was going for radiation every day of the week. And then at the weekend, she would come and work. She wasn't feeling very sick, but she was needing to go through this radiation, she thought. Anyway, so I figured if she's got cancer of the cervix, probably there's some negative energy stuck around a sexual relationship or around birth giving and around her children. And she and I are good friends, but it was still quite elite to even suggest that that might be going on. I mean, that's a real dive into her intimate sphere. But she was grateful that I suggested that it could be a possibility, and she immediately started telling me about her ex-husband, who she had felt so betrayed by, and that she had never forgiven him and never forgiven herself for staying with him for so long and for believing the lies for so long. So I started doing something with her called tapping. It's EFT tapping, emotional freedom technique. I'm sure you've heard of that.
Yes.
And I'm not a tapping expert, but I was just intuitively guided to tap with her.
Mm-hmm.
So we tapped through the points, and I just gave her the statements. Like, we started with a negative round of tapping, like, I hate that guy and I'll never forgive him. And just really getting the yuck up and out and being able to give a voice to those painful feelings inside. And then we did a positive round of tapping, like, I'm now willing to forgive and to release him and to let him go out of my life, and I'm looking forward to a new future. So that night, she said she had a massive bowel motion. She said, I've never had such a big bowel motion in my whole life. And the next day, I came back and we did a bit more tapping. We did a lot of tapping around her fear of, what if the radiation doesn't work? What if I'm still left with cancer at the end of this course of treatment with the radiation? So we tapped on taking personal responsibility for her healing and not giving her power away to the medical authorities, and also tapping on the power of life within her that wants to live. The power of life wants to live. It doesn't want to die. And then she had more. She had really bad diarrhea after that. She was releasing fast, so fast,
mm-hmm,
that she couldn't she needed to take some kind of thing to stop her up, and even that didn't work. But she knew that she was releasing the toxins of the past. And a few days later, after the second tapping session, she went to see the doctor, and he said, "Your cancer cells have gone." He said, "All we need to do now is just take a rest before you go back to work, because you've been, you know, your immune system needs to build up again." But he said, "You can go back to work next week if you want to."
Oh, beautiful. I love it. Miracles every day. They happen. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Stephanie, is there an affirmation that you could share with the listeners today? Maybe something that they could begin their day with after this show, something they can take with them, a little something they can put out there. What would you recommend?
I love working with affirmations such as, "I'm open to the good," or "I'm open to the good vibrations," "I'm open to miracles," "I wonder what the divine has in store for me today." But said in a very positive way.
Yes, fun.
Yeah, so you're living in the question and living in the willingness to just observe and witness what happens in your world. But definitely I'm open to good, good, and more good. How's that?
Oh, I love it. I love it. With about 3 minutes left in the show, Stephanie, what last words would you like to share with the listeners? What do you want to tell us before we say goodbye?
Oh, thank you for that question. I haven't really prepared for it. Yeah. Let's see what comes through. As I'm sharing with you, Paula, I'm just very aware that this is a miracle that we're together now having this conversation. Yes. It's a miracle that you lived. It's a miracle that I updated my LinkedIn profile a couple of days before you contacted me.
Oh, my gosh.
And I hadn't updated it for about 5 years or something. So I guess I want to leave your listeners with this awareness that if you look for miracles, you'll find them. If you're aware of, so you and I couldn't have orchestrated this, you know. Mm-hmm. Why did you go to LinkedIn on that day right after I had updated my profile?
Yes.
Why did that happen?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why did we? I mean, we were scheduled to speak a few days ago, and I was quite frazzled. I've been looking after my mother, and she's just had a knee operation, a replacement knee, and I was quite frazzled, and we both messed up on the timing, so it didn't happen when it was supposed to happen. And I was so relieved, and I thought, this is a miracle that I have a few more days just to become still and centered before you and I speak. So Einstein said, either everything is a miracle or nothing is a miracle.
Oh. Yes.
So I just would recommend to the listeners that they open themselves up to the possibility that everything in their lives is a miracle.
Yes. Oh, I love that. And, you know, what I believe, like, for example, with us, how we had the, you know, time difference hiccup, or when anything like that happens, I don't stress about it at all. I say, thank you, Source. Evidently, this was not to be the perfect recording, that what we are going to do is going to be what's meant to be. And that's kind of how I look at that. Anything in life. Really, I believe it's how you look at it. This didn't work out how I wanted. I have to do something different. Well, let's look at that as the different route we're taking, or the different approach is going to create something even more wonderful. That's
exactly. Yes. That's a beautiful way to look at things, rather than being disappointed or depressed because things don't go the way I think they should. Because what do I know? All I've got is my history, my past-based references, and my limited human resources. I don't have the whole picture in mind.
Yes.
So, but spirit does, or the invisible power does. So
yes.
I'm more interested in surrendering to that.
Yes.
Because life's certainly a lot more fun that way. Yes. And a lot more exciting.
And I
just love my life so much. It's so amazing, everything that happens in my world.
It is. It's just so beautiful. And, you know, when we surrender with a positive attitude and open to what beautiful things may manifest, oh, my gosh, the door that we open, it It really mm-hmm. is amazing and beautiful. Mm-hmm. Such a blessing.
And good for everyone too. Like, not just good for me or good for you, but in that space of miracles, everyone's blessed.
Yes.
The whole universe rejoices.
Yes. Oh, well, we will end the show today with just joy, and let's rejoice all those miracles, Stephanie. I just love it.
Me too. I just love it. Thank you, Paula.
Oh, you're so welcome. And I am rejoicing all the miracles going out to our listeners today. So the consciousness of miracles is open for all of us. We've opened it up today. Everyone enjoy and have a beautiful day. Love, hugs, and blessings. See you next week. Stephanie, love, hugs, and blessings.
Thank you, Paula. And right back at you.
Thank you. Bye.
God bless. Bye-bye.